The future of journalism is in quality, not quantity, according to Illinois State University alum Mitch Pugh. Pugh is the executive director of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina. He's on campus for Comm Week in the School of Communication. Pugh has been at the Courier, Post and Courier 6 years and says he has learned a lot about the paper's readers.
Charleston is an interesting place in the sense of it's, you know, steeped in history. There are people that have lived there for centuries, literally, like families. So it's an interesting place in that sense, but it's also interesting because it's growing so quickly. So it's being infused with companies like Boeing and Volvo that are building big manufacturing plants there. So it's a community that is very much in flux and change, and there are forces there, sort of the old guard and the new guard, that are kind of duking it out for who's going to be the most influential in the community moving forward. So it's been a really interesting kind of exciting but also volatile time to be there.
Sounds like a great opportunity to cover interesting stories of conflict and reinvention.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, it's also just been, you know, we've had our share of just really kind of awful, you know, tragedies that have happened there too, with the Mother Emanuel shooting and the Walter Scott situation too, that have sort of, I think, amplified those divisions or changes in the community and those kind of fissures that have developed. But I think in a good way. I think the community is coming to grips with who it is and who it's going to become in ways maybe that it wouldn't have been as comfortable doing 10 years ago.
What do your readers want from you today as opposed to 6 years ago, as opposed to what you hear about a generation ago?
Sure. I mean, I think we talked a little bit about this morning with some students here at Illinois State. But, you know, I think that the big change is, readers are smart. They know the real deal when they see it, and they know when a news report has been watered down or isn't up to the same quality level that maybe it was 5 or 10 years ago. And I think that our industry as a result is changing. We're now putting more value in having a deeper, more meaningful relationship with our readers and creating news that they really want to engage with and spend time with, and that will make their lives better and make them smarter. And I think that's a different metric than maybe we were using 5, even 4 years ago, where we were all about clicks and getting people to click on a story, whether they spent much time on it or not. You know, we didn't really care. We just wanted them to click. And I think now we're really looking at, you know, developing that deeper relationship and proving to the reader each and every day with each and every story that this is news that's worth not only engaging with but paying for.
So how do you measure engagement? How do you measure the relationship?
I mean, there's obviously, you know, there's both anecdotal ways that you can measure that, but certainly on the more, measurable way, we have, you know, different tools out there that tell us, different analytics tools that tell us a lot about our readers. But the one thing that we focus the most on is a metric we call engaged minutes. And engaged minutes are basically, they measure when a reader gets on the story, and then are they moving around, clicking on links, clicking on photo galleries, scrolling through the story to read the whole thing. And we really value that metric more than anything else, because if we're not creating content that's worth spending time with, then the readers are not going to find us worth spending time with. So that's the big thing we look at. But I think the other things that we really pay a lot of attention to are sort of what's happening. What's the chatter out there about us, whether it's on social media or in the community in general? Is it positive or negative? And I think because we're a locally owned newspaper, a news organization, I think we have a pretty good relationship with our audience, and they know us, and I think they have a fairly good opinion of what we do, because they see us out in the community. They see our owners out in the community interacting and talking to them and their friends and their neighbors. And I think that's something that as a industry we've lost a little bit as news media has become more consolidated and owned by bigger and bigger corporations.
That is a change. Can you enlarge on that? It's a rare model anymore to be locally owned as a part mm-hmm. of a small regional as opposed to a big conglomerate.
Sure.
So that enhances the ability to connect in a community. Does it do other things for you?
It's interesting. I think that if you had asked me this question when I first started there 6 years ago, I would tell you that probably being a small, family-owned, independent news organization had its challenges because we you know, our model then was to go out and drive as many page views to our website as possible, and then try to monetize that by selling ads around it, right? But we didn't. We were never going to be able to compete with these big corporations like Gannett or McClatchy or these other big newspaper operations that own papers, hundreds of papers across the country, and could go to a Ford and offer up millions and millions and millions of impressions. We could never compete at that scale. But that actually ended up being a positive for us, because we could not compete at that scale. So we had to be think a little bit differently about what we were doing, and we had to realize we can't compete at scale. But where we can be successful is locally on the ground with the 700,000 people that live in the Charleston market, and really engage with them. And I think it helped us turn our model more toward, we think the future is all about engaging with readers and proving to them that our content's worth paying for, and that reader revenue is going to be what sustains us moving forward. And it's not going to be, we don't think the advertising market's coming back for newspapers. So we've really focused in on that. And I think being locally owned and being able to pivot quickly, make decisions quickly, and you know, just really understand our market in a way someone who lives in Sacramento isn't going to, has really helped us be successful.
So you're taking bigger swings at a smaller number of stories. Does the drop in story count matter?
It does, but in a positive way. So what the really interesting thing that we've found is that we were producing too many stories. So when I, again, 4 or 5 years ago, we were producing 50 to 65 stories a day. And we were posting them on our website. Some of them were very short. Some of them were longer, various topics. We, the data told us that our audience was telling us that really only about a third of those were worth it. That only about a third of those were actually meaningful to our audience and worth engaging with, and then therefore worth paying for. So now we publish somewhere between 24 and 30 stories a day. Our traffic is higher, and we have more people who have subscribed digitally to our website than ever before.
In 2015, you won a Pulitzer for covering domestic violence. Did the entry of the P word into the local community change your community image, change the community response or engagement?
I think it changed those things, absolutely. I don't know that it did a whole lot for us in terms of the business model, because it's a different thing. But walking around town and talking to people and institutions maybe that were skeptical of us earlier, I think that helped change the conversation. Well, I think the story helped. The award is nice. But there's a certain amount of serendipity that needs to happen for something like that to occur, because there's lots of great journalism every year that does not get recognized. But I think the fact that we committed the kind of resources we did and the time and the energy to tackling an important topic that affected a lot of people really helped raise the opinion the community had of us. The award helped, but I really think it was just as much about the story.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Mitch Pugh, the editor of the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina, and part of ISU's Comm Week and an ISU alum.
I guess technically I was here from 92 to 94 and then transferred to the University of Illinois at Springfield where I graduated. But I think I get to count as an alum even if I didn't graduate from there.
That works. We'll claim you.
Yeah.
So how did winning the Pulitzer change the newsroom? Change the atmosphere in the newsroom?
I think that it's interesting. I think mostly positive. I think it certainly caused folks to take a look at what they were doing and realize, we can do this kind of work. And it really inspired, I think, the newsroom to think bigger and more broadly about the kind of journalism they do and the impact it can have. I think, there's always a little bit of it was interesting for me to watch because having been in the business a little while, you realize, again, how much serendipity is involved in winning something like that. So the year after, in 2016, we had a year of really horrible things happening in Charleston. There was a lot of big national news that came out. We did a lot of projects. And when the Pulitzers came out that year and we were a finalist for two but didn't win, there was sort of a deflated attitude in the newsroom, and I had to walk around and remind them all. You know,
this was really good.
You all just accomplished something really great. Maybe your expectations are a little bit out of whack. So we got a little expectation management we've got to do. But I think what it's really helped us do is I think inspire people to think bigger and better, and it's really helped us in hiring and attracting talent to that newsroom.
Give us some examples of thinking bigger and better about the kinds of stories you go after, as opposed to the smaller ball that you were trying to play 6 years ago.
So, I mean, I think a great example is, you know, and the timing was perfect. About 4 months before the Walter Scott shooting, which I think everybody's familiar with, a white officer shot a black man fleeing a traffic stop in the back. And killed him. There was another police-involved shooting in which, the police didn't end up being the ones who had, ended up being a clean shoot, so to speak. But it raised a lot of questions in the community about how these things are investigated and reported back. And so we put together the first ever database of police-involved shootings in South Carolina. We went back 10 years and pulled all of the cases and put them into a database and then sliced and diced the information to find out, you know, what were the common themes? How were these cases investigated? And then we were able to report back to the community that, officers are treated significantly differently in a police-involved shooting than a normal shooting. So if you or I were to shoot someone, the way we would be treated was significantly different than the way an officer would. And we were able to demonstrate that through data and through some pretty deep reporting. And I'm not sure we would have thought to do that if we hadn't had the experience of understanding what that kind of reporting can do for a community and help bring everyone together and rally around something that might be controversial. I mean, the same thing with the Tell Death, the domestic violence series. We didn't just say, hey, this is bad. We went back and built a database and we were able to quantify everything that we talked about. So every assertion we made in the story was backed up by the data. And I think that, that again, with shots fired, the project I was talking about, we were able to do that again. So I think it's, just building on all of those, repeating on different topics, but being able to build on that, those lessons learned, but making the facts unassailable is really critical to that.
Is your ownership model or the big chain ownership model likely to prevail in this new environment?
If I knew that, I would probably be in a much better financial shape personally. But I think that I think the verdict's out on that. I think the metrics that I see and the success that I see in what we're doing, in what privately owned newspapers like the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the Seattle Times, the Dallas Morning News, the work that I see them doing and the success I see them having, I know that model can work. Now, I don't know that I can say that that's going to get replicated successfully and well by the big chains. So, they may end up still being the dominant factor in the media world for years to come, but I am confident that independently, locally owned news organizations like the Post and Courier, like the Seattle Times, like the Minneapolis Star Tribune can make this work and be sustainable moving forward. And that's the thing that I think that gets lost in all of this discussion around media these days and the gloom and doom. If newspapers and news organizations return to really being about their community and rooted in their community, I think there's still a model that can work, and I think that we're proving it and others are proving it.
A recent Pew study found a widespread lack of awareness among Americans about the revenue challenges facing local news media operations. Even amid declining revenues and staffing, about 7 in 10 Americans think their local news outlets are doing very or somewhat well financially. What do you make of that?
That's interesting. I don't know what I make of that. I think that I think it's somewhat similar to the way that when it comes to surveys, I'm not a really big believer in surveys personally. I think surveys, people answer surveys, they tell you what you want to hear, what they think you want to hear. I'm more of a believer in measuring people's behavior. But I think it's a lot like if you ask someone what they think of Congress, they tell you, Congress is awful. Congress's approval rating is what, like 15-18%? But if you ask them what they think of their local representative, oh, he's great. You know, and their local guy always gets 60-70% approval rating. So they hate Congress, but it's not their local guy. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that with people's perceptions of the media, that, yeah, there's this big media problem out there, but it's not my local paper, because I still get that every day and it's showing up on my doorstep. I do think we need to do a better job as an industry of explaining to readers who we are, what we do, why we do it, how we do it, and what our challenges are.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. That's Mitch Pugh, executive editor of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Post and Courier newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina. He's back at Illinois State University this week to speak at ComWeek. A Pointer study indicated that really only about 14% of Americans are paying for their journalism. Mm-hmm. Is that sustainable?
That number is not, but I think that that's, a point in time number too. I mean, I go back and so I can just speak locally about Charleston. In the last 2 years, we've grown our digital only, paying subscribers by 250%. So, that trend is going in the right direction. And we believe that we've just scratched the surface in terms of the number of people in our market that are, the metric that we look at is, so how many unique visitors do you have to your website every day? We think we can convert somewhere between 1.5 and 2% of those. That's a small number.
Okay.
But when you do that, for our market, that's somewhere between 25 and 35,000 people paying us to read our news online. And if we can achieve that over the next 5 years, I can pay for the newsroom as it exists now. It can be fully funded by those 25 to 35,000 people. So it's doable. But I think the challenge we have is that there's so many people out there now with their hand out asking to be paid.
Right.
And we're not all created equal. And I think that my hope is that the consumer, everything I've seen in the data that we've been working with to work on this, is that consumers aren't stupid. They won't pay for something that's not worth it. So I think for this to be successful, news organizations need to be committed to providing news that is worth paying for.
So both in terms of evidence and aspirationally, you have achieved a higher quality product. You're seeing that in itself attract numbers. But what else do you have to do to convert the non-paying to the paying?
Well, I mean, I think, there's real simple things like making it a seamless, easy process. I mean, I don't know if you're a Netflix subscriber, but it's really easy to sign up. It's really easy to sign up for Netflix. Newspapers like to make it pretty hard for you to sign up and hand them money. So we got some work to do on the technology and the user experience. I think the user experience at most websites is pretty poor. There's a lot of work to be done there. I think that's part of it. But I think to go back to something we were just talking about, I think getting our message out there. We've not been very good at marketing ourselves. We've not been very good about telling, our community and our readers who we are and what we do and why it's important. And I think we need to be a lot more aggressive at that if we're going to be successful.
How do you see Facebook and Twitter? Friends of journalism? Foes? Something else?
Foes, for sure. I am not high on either of those platforms. I'm a big Twitter user, too, and I love it for my own personal, news feed. But they have no interest in us being successful. They'll say they will, but they don't. And I think Facebook's even worse. I think Mark Zuckerberg does what's in the best interest of Mark Zuckerberg each and every time. And maybe at some point it will be in his interest to be more friendly to us. And I think he's starting to see that right now. But I'm still very suspect of that. And frankly, I think when you look at where our business is going, building one-on-one quality relationships with our audience and our readers, I don't need Facebook to do that. In fact, Facebook's kind of an impediment. And I think we have de-emphasized the role that plays in how we distribute and distribute the news and talk to our readers.
So how do you reach out then?
We do have a closed Facebook group that you have to be a subscriber to be a part of. So we'll use it for that. But the other thing that we do a lot of in our market is community events. So actually, I think tomorrow I'm going to be still in the air, flying back. But we have our first Pints in Politics event with our local congressman, where people can come in have a pint and ask questions of their congressman. We'll have Senator Tim Scott after that. We've done other community events around the 10th anniversary of the bridge. We built a giant Lego replica of the bridge, et cetera. But, I mean, getting out and engaging with your community, having events that they want to go and attend and have fun, but also be educated is a huge part of that.
You attended to ISU, worked at the student newspaper, The Vedette, back in town this week for Comic. What's your message to all these young journalists you'll be meeting with about the health of the industry and their ability to find a job in it?
Yeah, I was just talking with one of the Vedette journalists a little earlier about this. You know, it's probably the most chaotic and disruptive time in the business of journalism. And so from that sense, it's a challenge. But when you think about just the pure journalism aspect of this, of going out and telling great stories and there being an audience for them, it's among the best times to be a journalist. I think the public is pushing back in ways that are intriguing and heartening against this whole notion that we're all fake news. And you're starting to see a significant portion of the public embrace what journalism does and support it and to want to support it. I think it's going to change a lot for those young folks. They might not work at a newspaper like the one that I work at, or they might not have access to that, but there are, you know, nonprofit news organizations starting up all over the country. There's a lot of people out there who have money that are willing to fund journalism and fund the ideals behind it. And I think that it's going to change a lot and it's going to look a lot different. But there's probably never been a more exciting, interesting time to be starting out and a more necessary time. I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of noise and a lot of distractions and a lot of things that aren't real. So the more we have real journalists out there doing real work and being able to explain that to readers in a way that they understand, it's going to be really critical to making sure that our democracy stays sound. I know that sounds lofty, but I mean, I really, you know, there was a great quote that I used today in the presentation that, you know, newspapers are little machines spitting out healthy democracies. And I think that, you know, the data and the sort of studies out there back that up, that a healthy news operation is going to make a healthy community.
Mitch Pugh is the executive editor of the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.